It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Secretary Kerry heads to Saudi Arabia for talks on Iraq. And White House asks Congress for $500 million to equip and train Syrian opposition. I'm Bill Michaels, reporting from Washington. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry meets today with Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah to discuss how to confront Sunni extremists that have taken over large parts of Iraq and Syria. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki said Thursday that Syrian warplanes targeted militants earlier this week on the Syrian side of the Iraqi-Syrian border. They have used as a gateway to take over large areas in northern and western Iraq. Maliki said he welcomed the Syrian air attacks, which occurred Tuesday, but did not ask for them. U.S. State Department spokesperson Marie Harf.
To be very clear, Iraq's security situation cannot and should not be resolved by the Assad regime, by airstrikes from the Assad regime, or by militias funded and supported by other countries in the region stepping in.
Meanwhile, Iran is also supporting the Shiite-led Baghdad government, supplying tons of military equipment and deploying surveillance drones in the Iraqi skies from an airfield in Baghdad. The White House is asking the U.S. Congress for $500 million to equip and train selected members of the armed moderate Syrian opposition. National Security Council spokeswoman Caitlin Hayden said Thursday the money will also be used to help defend the Syrian people, stabilize areas under rebel control, and meet the threat of terrorism. UN Humanitarian Chief Valerie Amos said Thursday that 10.8 million Syrians are in need of humanitarian assistance. That's 1.5 million more than just 6 months ago. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
Valerie Amos returned to the Security Council for the fourth time since Resolution 2139 was adopted in February, demanding that the Syrian government and opposition facilitate the work of humanitarians and stop obstructing aid deliveries. In what has become a disturbing trend, she reported that instead of the situation on the ground improving, it is becoming worse.
Once again, I remind this council that targeting or indiscriminately attacking vulnerable civilians constitutes a war crime.
She said 4.7 million Syrians live in hard-to-reach areas, an increase of more than 1 million people since the resolution was adopted 4 months ago. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Witnesses say thousands of Ukrainians fleeing violence in eastern Ukraine lined up late Thursday at a Russian border crossing in cars packed with personal belongings to cross into Russia. The exodus, witnessed by an Associated Press reporter, came hours before a week-long Ukrainian ceasefire was to expire, with little progress reported in talks aimed at ending a deadly armed rebellion by pro-Russian separatists. It remained unclear whether today's deadline will be extended. Cameroon's military has killed 10 suspected Boko Haram members along its northern border with Nigeria and arrested 50 Nigerian businessmen in Cameroon for allegedly collaborating with the militants. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from northern Cameroon.
The military says in addition to killing some of the militants, it confiscated vehicles, a large quantity of weapons, and detained dozens of Nigerians on suspicion of aiding Boko Haram. Military spokesman Colonel Didier Bajek acknowledges Boko Haram has become a serious threat in northern Cameroon. He says the security situation in North Cameroon is getting worse, and Boko Haram is a very real threat in terms of recruiting young people, killing, looting and stealing. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
Police in Libya say unknown gunmen shot and killed a well-known human rights activist just after she cast her vote in Libya's parliamentary election Wednesday. State Department spokeswoman Marie Harf says the United States condemns in the strongest terms what she calls the activist's senseless and brutal murder. Harf calls her a courageous woman and a true Libyan patriot. A Sudanese Christian woman sentenced to death for apostasy has been freed but ordered not to leave the country. For more on these stories, visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Bill Michaels in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, June 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The African Union Summit in Equatorial Guinea's capital enters its second and final day today, Friday.
For agriculture and our environment to flourish, we need conditions of peace and stability, and for our people not to be under threat from armed gangs, terrorists, and human and arms traffickers.
That's AU Commission Chairperson Nkosi Zana Dlamini Zuma. Zambia's president visits Israel, but the opposition says the trip is a medical one. Refugees in Uganda contribute to the local economy. Millions of South African children still live in poverty. And two Liberian-American corruption whistleblowers hold town hall meetings in the United States.
It continues to grow. It has been extremely successful. We have continued to gather the signatures required so that the Liberia legislatures can pass a referendum to ensure that what is happening with the present government stops.
Ellen Cockrum is one of two Liberian Americans indicted by the Liberian government for economic sabotage. And African foreign students thrive in Brazil. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The 23rd summit of the African Union enters its second and final day today, Friday, in the Equatorial Guinea capital, Malabo. In her opening remarks on Thursday, AU Commission Chairperson Nkosi Zana Dlamini Zuma called on African leaders to be committed to their pledge of ending conflicts on the continent by the year 2020. Reporter Sandra Nyaira of VOA Zimbabwe program has details from Malabo.
Dr. Dlamini Zuma said without peace and stability, Africa will not be able to develop its agriculture, create jobs and food security.
Agriculture is critical in our industrialization efforts. Agro-processing of our agricultural products are not only critical for food security, but also to increase earnings, job creation, and our broader goal of industrialization. For agriculture and our environment to flourish, we need conditions of peace and stability, and for our people not to be under threat from armed gangs, terrorists, and human and arms traffickers.
African leaders are gathered in Malabo to recommit their desire to building a better Africa with the mantra, the Africa we want, under Agenda 2063, the continent's vision and plan for the next 50 years that Dlamini Zuma told the conference would be adopted at the next summit. The summit is running under the theme Agriculture and Food Security. Dlamini Zuma said the youth are in the majority on the continent, but said they are hardly interested in agriculture because the continent's farming methods are old.
Our agriculture in the main is still quite traditional and not modern. A practical priority, therefore, is to modernize and mechanize, to use science and technology.
2014 is Africa's year of promoting and improving agriculture. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said he was concerned by conflicts in some countries like South Sudan and the Central African Republic, saying they are a blight on Africa's progress. He said only peace and stability can help Africa move towards eradicating hunger and poverty and reaching the Millennium Development Goals.
Agriculture does not simply produce the food people need. It is a source of empowerment, an engine for economic growth, and a vital contributor to environmental services. I commend the African Union on its resolve to end hunger and malnutrition by 2025.
He said the climate change is one of Africa's major challenges, adding leaders on the continent need to raise their voice on the issue. He invited them to New York to discuss climate change in September and its impact mostly on the developing world. Meanwhile, 1.org's Do Agric petition, which calls on African leaders to recommit to spending at least 10% of national budgets on effective agriculture investments, has gathered more than 2 million signatures of support from African citizens across the continent. Reporting from Sipopo in Malabo, Equatorial Guinea, this is Sandra Nyaira.
Zambia's information minister says President Michael Sata is on a working visit to Israel aimed at attracting Israeli businesses and investors. Mwasa Kapiya dismissed media reports that the trip was made so that Mr. Sata could seek medical attention for an undisclosed ailment. Opposition groups say Mr. Sata's last few public appearances have shown him frail and tired. But Kapiya tells reporter Peter Clotty Mr. Sata is well and fit.
It's not a state visit. He's just gone there on a holiday, but to woo some investors from that country. It's a working holiday, in fact. Yes, it's true. He's in Israel.
So basically, he's going to market Zambia to the people of Israel?
Well, that's the duty of a president. You know, we are a developing country. So when the president travels out, he's there to market Zambia. Even as a minister myself, when I go, when I travel out, I was in Washington the other time, and 2 weeks ago I was in Mexico. Our duty is to sell Zambia to the outside world.
What can you tell me about the bilateral or multilateral relations between the government of Israel and Zambia over the years?
The friendship has been cordial since independence, and indeed, we are an agriculture-oriented country, and as you are aware, Israel also in that line. Since independence, especially during the First Republic, when we had President Kaunda in the ruling chair, we were having a lot of Israelis coming to Zambia to move us ahead in terms of pushing agriculture forward. And indeed, Israel has been a friend to Zambia since independence.
Some opposition groups are saying that the president, although is on a visit, is going to seek medical treatment abroad, and that is why he is there.
Well, I think if we have such opposition leaders, you better talk to them. Me, I'm talking to you as government spokesperson. What I know is that the president is on a working holiday in Israel, and he's fit. If he were sick, he wouldn't have traveled. In fact, just Monday last week, he chaired the usual cabinet meeting. And before he left on Thursday, I was with him, talking to him. We were always discussing developmental issues in the country. So if the opposition are saying he's going there to seek medical attention, talk to them, not me. Me, I know he's okay.
So how long will he be gone for the working visit?
As you know it very well, that the president, you cannot tell that you'll be coming on such and such a day or you'll be returning such and such. You know, where security is concerned, we shall announce to the country when he's almost about to return back home. But we don't do that security-wise.
Mwasa Kapiya is Zambia's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. Two Liberian Americans who made secret recordings of Liberian government officials as they discussed corruption in the country have been holding town hall meetings across the United States. The government has indicted Melvin Johnson and Ellen Cockrum for economic sabotage and is seeking their extradition. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf recently challenged the two to release any recordings they might have made of her. Cockrum and Johnson tell me that they plan to release those recordings by mid-July. They say their town hall meetings have been successful.
It continues to grow. It has been extremely successful. We have continued to gather the signatures required so that the Liberia legislatures can pass a referendum to ensure that what is happening with the present government stops. And what we mean by that is that we feel that President Sirleaf has filled the country. She has filled the democratic process that we trusted when we elected her. And so because of this, our people continue to voice what they know must be done. And this has come through the town hall forums, through their signatures. It has also come through signatures gathering in Liberia.
The latest statement by President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, she has accused you of mounting a campaign of personal vendetta against her because she says she tried to stop your scheme to defraud the Liberian government when all she was trying to do was to try to help you. Did you try to defraud the Liberian government?
Mr. Butte, to you and to the entire listening audience, I think the response is a resounding no. I never tried to defraud the Liberian government, nor did I ever defraud the Liberian government.
Judge Johnson, the Liberian government has indicted the both of you, and it is also seeking your extradition from the United States. I know the last time we talked, you are said you have not been served with any extradition notice. What's the update?
The update on the extradition is, again, there is no extradition. Going back to December 11th of last year, the judge who was on the case, Judge Dixon Blamo, made it very clear in a public statement that there was no evidence. And so when you ask for an update on the extradition, as we have always stated now, about a year and a half into this process, there is not going to be, there has not been, and there isn't any extradition, simply because there is no evidence against us.
I have spoken with you here on Voice of America twice or so, and you mentioned that the both of you made secret recordings of officials of the Liberian government. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, while talking with the United Nations Radio in Liberia, admitted that perhaps that Ms. Cochran and you might have recordings of her, but she dared you to play any recording that you might have made of her because she said it will expose you, Ms. Cochran, when you used to beg her for favors. First of all, do you have recordings of the president?
Yes, clearly we have recordings of the president. We're somewhat glad that she's daring us to release the recording. We have made a commitment that between now and July 26th, we're looking at the week of July 15th or so to release the recording that will show what has been going on in Liberia that will also tie in with the other recordings that we have released.
That was Melvin Johnson and Ellen Cochran, two Liberian corruption whistleblowers. They were speaking with me from the U.S. state of Maryland, where they will hold their next town hall meeting this weekend. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, June 27th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. A new report on refugees in Uganda finds that most actually benefit from their host country rather than draining its resources. As Hillary Hewler reports, refugees in Kampala are supporting themselves without humanitarian aid and are creating new businesses.
Charlotte Mapendo spends nearly every day walking the streets and dusty alleyways of her adopted home, Kampala. She carries folds of colorful Congolese chitenge cloth on her head, selling the fabric as she goes. Mapendo fled her native Democratic Republic of Congo 2 years ago after rebel soldiers killed her husband and knocked out her front teeth. She arrived in Kampala with nothing but the clothes on her back. She says she started her business by selling the chitenge she was wearing around her waist, using the little money she made to buy more. Right now, she only sells enough fabric to feed her 5 children, but she hopes eventually to scrape together the capital to open a small shop. A new report by the Refugee Studies Center at Britain's Oxford University found that refugees like Mapendo can have a positive economic impact on their host countries if given the chance to work. The report focuses on Uganda, where 99% of refugees earn their own incomes. The vast majority of urban refugees, it found, receive no international aid at all. Yusra Naguja of the Kampala-based Refugee Law Project explains that Uganda's policy requires urban refugees to support themselves.
They are self-sustaining. Yes, they might be staying in dingy areas and in the slums, but they are paying rent. So how are they able to pay this rent? Because no organization is paying rent for them.
This, she says, forces them to be industrious and resourceful. Many survive by selling cloth or jewelry or by braiding hair. Some manage to grow their businesses to the point where they employ other refugees, or even native Ugandans. She says the Somali refugee community in Kisenyi, a neighborhood in Kampala, is a good example of how successful they can be.
They're operating small businesses like selling perfume or selling beauty products or selling tea or food. And most of the petrol stations are operated by Somalis. They have big shops, they have butcheries. Basically, when you go to Kisenyi, business is for the Somalis.
Nor do they all focus on trade. Joshua Gatto is a Congolese refugee who's been living in Uganda for the past 18 years. He earned a university degree in Kampala and now works for an organization helping other refugees to adjust.
I work as a community interpreter. You know, refugees from eastern part of Congo and the Congo as a whole don't know English. I also help in teaching these refugees English language.
But despite the opportunities Uganda offers, Gatto says he's still classed as a refugee and will always be considered a foreigner. He lives in fear that everything he's built for his family could be taken away. He hopes that someday Ugandans will recognize what refugees contribute to the country. Hillary Hewler for VOA News, Kampala.
20 years into South Africa's democracy, race remains a big contributing factor to high levels of poverty faced by children. The South African Human Rights Commission says many children who are black, ethnic Indian, and colored are trapped in the injustices of poverty, including lack of access to adequate nutrition, clean running water, and proper sanitation. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
In a recently released study, the South African Human Rights Commission concludes the racist legacy of the apartheid era is still impacting children of non-white families. The report is titled Poverty Traps and Social Exclusion Amongst Children in South Africa. Researchers say children of color make up the majority of those who are not educated, without employable skills, and hindered by poor nutrition and lack access to basic social services. The study also notes that South Africa's low economic growth and chronic unemployment rate of 25% have compounded the problems keeping so many children in poverty. Speaking at the launch of the report in Johannesburg, Human Rights Commission Chairman Lawrence Mushwana said in a country of South Africa's resources, the government needs to do better to address child poverty.
The dire consequences of poverty cannot be emphasized. Their vulnerable exposure to all forms of social ills, such as drugs, crime, and abuse, are all inexplicable when happening in a country such as South Africa.
Zane Dango, special advisor to the Minister of Social Development, attended the launch of the report on behalf of the government and pledged to work with civil groups to expand and extend poverty reduction policies.
We need complementary strategies. We need our social protection system to be improved. Aside from the universalization of the child support grant, the Minister of Social Development has thrown a policy balloon over the last 2 weeks. She is setting out her desire for the child support grant to be extended to the age of 23.
Many economists here argue the government's grant approach is not financially viable given the strain on the budget and really doesn't address the fundamental need for a solid education to lift children out of the cycle of poverty. Sivens van der Berg is a professor of economics at the University of Stellenbosch in Cape Town.
Every child should read. You can't go beyond grade 4 and really make much of the school system if you don't have a proper base in terms of reading.
South Africa's education system has been ranked amongst the bottom third of more than 140 countries by the World Economic Forum. Van der Berg says for other social intervention programs to be effective, the government will need to improve its efficiency in public expenditure, especially in education. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Brazil is not only a dream destination for football fans from all over the world, but the emerging power is also receiving more and more students from Africa. The country is more accessible than the U.S. or Europe, and African students can find better infrastructure there than they can at home. VOA correspondent Nicolas Pinot met some of them in Brasilia.
With almost 40,000 students, the University of Brasilia is an institution here. Among them are 100 or so Africans who came to try the Brazilian adventure. Most of them are from Angola or Cape Verde. But you also find some Francophones from Ivory Coast and Democratic Republic of Congo.
There are plus de structures pour étudiants, il y a la bibliothèque.
Here you have more facilities for the students, like the library, many other things you do not have at University of Kinshasa. The Brazilian government also helps the students with grants, so we have better conditions here than in Congo.
These young people came to find opportunities. The United States or Europe are often inaccessible. Brazil, as an emerging power, is more appealing, even though Portuguese is the first language. To get a visa for Brazil, African students are obligated to return home after they graduate. These does not prevent them from fitting in.
They were colonized by the Portuguese, but they have many African roots. So it was very easy to feel integrated, make friends, learn the language. So I am okay, no problem.
Although this Brazilian adventure has many advantages, home sweet home is always on their minds, and they miss their families. They will spend several years without seeing them.
Kinshasa, ça me manque beaucoup parce que ça fait déjà une année et demie que je suis.
I miss Kinshasa so much. I've been here a year and a half. It's not easy with family to live far away from them, mommy and daddy. I miss them so much, even if we communicate with phone calls. But it is expensive.
Les appels, malgré que c'est cher.
Many swear they will go back home after their studies, with no guarantee that Africa will offer the same opportunities. But these young people want to succeed in their country and look at the future with an optimism they have found among Brazilians. Nicola Pino, VOA, Brasilia.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the FIFA World Cup in Brazil. The Algerian Desert Fox achieved a milestone when they qualified for the knockout stage at the World Cup on Thursday evening. Algeria drew 1-1 with Russia in Curitiba, while a 10-man Belgium side pipped South Korea 1-0 in the other Group H fixture in Sao Paulo. As a result, Belgium and second-placed Algeria qualify for the knockout stage, while Russia and South Korea head home. This is the first time two African teams have qualified for the knockout stage at the World Cup, as Algeria joined African champions Nigeria in the last 16. Elsewhere in Group G, Portugal edged Ghana 2-1 in Brasilia as Germany pipped the United States of America 1-0 in Recife. As a result, Germany topped the group. The United States of America is second, Portugal is third, and Ghana are fourth. Meanwhile, FIFA disciplinary committee has banned Uruguay's Luis Suarez for 4 months from all football-related activities as sanction for biting Italian defender Giorgio Chiellini during the Uruguay-Italy World Cup tie. Suarez is also banned from 9 FIFA World Cup matches, starting with the Uruguay-Colombia clash on Saturday. He has also been fined over $112,000. Suarez is banned from appearing near any football facility during the four-month ban. Still in Brazil, hosts Brazil play Chile in Belo Horizonte as Colombia meet Uruguay in Rio de Janeiro at the start of the knockout phase of the competition tomorrow, Saturday. On Sunday, the Netherlands play Mexico in Fortaleza as Costa Rica engage Greece in Recife. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, June 27th.
I have said it before, and I will continue to say it over and over, that there are 99 days for a thief, but just a day for the owner of the house. You know, the Boko Haram continue to destroy innocent Nigerians, but I assure both direct and indirect perpetrators that they shall not escape the unpardonable judgment of God. I am Prince John Ushir in Obanipu, Obodo Ranch Resorts, Cross River State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A Sudanese Christian woman sentenced to death for apostasy has been freed but ordered not to leave the country. That's it for this Friday, June 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Tracy Carter, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Michael Woman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butty in Washington, wishing everybody a very good weekend.
African Music Mix.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. North to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Tune in for from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on The Voice of America.